Good morning and welcome to the breakfast show on Faith FM with Scaffy and Lawson. This is the best table for you to start your day with positive and uplifting spiritual thoughts. You're listening all across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88, depending on where you are. You can also chat to us at any time at 0491 064 669. I'm in the studio today with Lawson and Shell, the producer, at the decks.
Mm-hmm.
Lawson, today is the final day of the most important Jewish holiday that you've never heard of.
Well, we've heard of it.
It's not you.
People in general.
People in general. Yes.
Yeah. It's essentially Pentecost.
Yeah, exactly. So it's Shavuot.
Feast of Weeks.
The Feast of Weeks. Shavuot means weeks in plural in Hebrew. And do you know how do you greet your Jewish friends on their Jewish holidays?
Well, I know that you usually greet them by saying like shalom.
Shalom. No. This is just like the everyday greeting.
But on the holidays, like, happy holidays. I have no idea. How do you say it?
Shag Sameach.
Shag Sameach.
So Shag Sameach. And do you know why this is an important holiday? Because it marks not only the reaping and the harvesting of the wheat. Mm-hmm. And there's some parallels there with the 3,000 that were reaped in baptized in the book of Acts. So there's something pretty interesting there, the wheat and the tares and whatnot. Mm. But it celebrates the giving of the Ten Commandments.
Wow.
The Jews believe to have been given in 1312 before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And guess which day it was, according to the tradition?
Which
day were the Ten Commandments given? It was a Sabbath day.
On a Sabbath day.
So they read the Ten Commandments, they celebrate that, and it's 50 days after Passover. It's a great celebration. In today's show, we're going to be talking about elephants. Can they use language just as humans? We're going to be talking about UK animal rights activists defacing a king's official portrait. We're going to be having an interview with Rod Bailey, about how to start properly seedlings at your garden. And our Bible study will be in Can We Avoid Persecution Altogether? Today's show is respectful. You cannot miss it.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
And before Lawson tells us all about elephants, we have to ask you, Lawson, this question. How are your push-ups going?
Oh, good. I got push-ups done yesterday. Man, I'm struggling today. I'm struggling. I'm a little bit weak. I'm doing some fruit fasting at the moment. So I'm like only eating fruit and only eating a very small portion of fruit. It's similar to water fasting, but kind of keeps your stomach juices going. Kind of following after the fantastic health program called the Maker Heals program, which is all about, like, it's focused on God. It's focused on health. And the Maker Heals program starts with like a 3-day fruit fasting detox, and I'm on my third day of 2 pieces of fruit per meal, and I'm like, I'm feeling it. I'm like, oh man, I do not feel energized. So we'll see if I'll catch up on the push-ups later.
All right, yeah, you gotta catch up. We're gonna catch up. Look, I before I started the show this morning, I come to the studio, of course, before the show starts,
sure.
And I made a commitment to reach my goal of 145 by the end of the show.
What are you up to?
So I'm already at 85.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, so
killing it.
So at every song, 10 push-ups. Uh-huh. And before the show starts, I start with 75.
Okay.
So 5 sets of 15.
Dude, you're inspiring.
And why are we doing this, Lawson?
Oh,
not because we want to get strong, even though we're getting strong.
Yeah.
Not because we want to rip our shirts on the bicep side of things, but because we are raising awareness for mental health and suicide in Australia.
Yeah, our total number of push-ups is 3,420.
249.
Sorry, 3,249.
Yes. Don't make the problem worse than it actually is, love.
And that's the number of people who committed suicide in 2022. We're going to be doing that amount of push-ups.
That's right.
Remembrance to raise awareness and also to raise money for Faith FM. So if you want to head to faithfm.com.au/donate, and you'll be able to give some money. This is why, you know, our donations mean that we don't have ads. We don't have annoying guys, you know, yelling at you about fencing or whatever it may be in between every single song, or section. No, no, no.
Or selling you stuff.
That's right. We don't want to sell you anything except God's word.
Except the word of God.
And that comes from, you know, we're enabled to stay on.
And sell it for free,
because of our
by the way.
Sponsors. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're giving. So, how do you make a donation?
Again, faithfm.com.au, and I believe it's /donate.
Yes, even at the front landing page, you can find some donation
the
boxes.
Donate tab.
You can make a generous gift to God's cause on this planet. And while you go there, there's something else as well. There's a splash banner.
Yes, for our end of financial year giveaway, if you go to faithfm.com.au, click on that banner, you can go into the absolutely free, like, you know, there are like lots of people do these like raffles and stuff, and there's like this secret hidden free option, because all of these like internet giveaways, they have to be free, but really they're just like tricking you into buying tickets for some, no. Completely free, no payment option, just free. For our end of financial year, you can go in there and
get a what?
And you can win an iPad.
An iPad. 10th generation iPad.
Brand new iPad.
Like a legit iPad.
Completely for free. And also, like, we've got 5 runner-up, you know, prizes of $20 gift cards. All you have to do is click the splash banner, follow the instructions, and also our breakfast show code word as well, which you can enter, is the word honey. So
honey.
Head over faithfm.com.au. But also 0491064669 is the number to get in touch with us, because we're about to give our first quiz question for today for our amazing prizes of either a King James or a New King James compact Bible that we are giving away. It's beautiful, leather, zipper protected, red letter, reference. Amazing Bible. But here we go. First question of the day. The last commandment in the list of 10 tells us not to blank. What does it tell us not to do? If you know the answer, 0491-064-669. Again, the last commandment in the list of 10 tells us not to blank. What does it tell us not to do?
It's probably one of the most important commandments in so many ways. I'll tell you why. But later, at the end of the show, right now, Lawson, we want to know about elephants. What do you have to say about them?
Yeah, okay. So, elephants. Let's get into it. Elephants are really smart. And they're really amazing. They're really majestic, beautiful, chunky, cool animal. They're just awesome. It's producer Shell's favorite animal. Is it Lyle's favorite animal as well? Lyle and Shell.
It's rare to match like a husband and wife favorite animal being the exact same. This is the first time I've seen it.
I think so.
Do you know my wife's is the turtle.
The turtle, yeah.
Yes, and for me is the cheetah.
Oh, wow. My favorite's the penguin. Love penguins. Shout out penguins. But these elephants. Okay.
Okay.
We know that elephants are incredibly smart.
Hey, by the way, what's your favorite animal?
I just listener. Said,
no, not you, Lawson. To the listener. Send us 0491-064-669. What is your favorite animal? We would like to know, and we will read it here out loud. Yes, Lawson, but I interrupted you. Where you were again?
So elephants are incredibly smart. They can do social acts. We know that you can train elephants up to do all kinds of things, paint pictures and kick soccer balls and do just amazing things. But when they're in the wild, they raise children collectively as well. Like they act as a tribe to raise children.
Smart.
And they also communicate across miles of countryside using complex low frequency vocalizations. And this is something that was more recently discovered. You know, they do these humming and they're able to call each other and whatnot. But recently their researchers have been learning about elephantese, they're calling it their language, elephantese, and how elephants are able to distinguish themselves and call themselves by name.
So each elephant has a name, and every elephant in the pack knows each other's names, and they call them by using the same exact song.
So,
sound.
For example, there was a group of scientists from Colorado State University. They were looking at this group. They had organized this group of elephants into, they had one matriarch elephant, one, you know, the matriarch elephant of the herd. And then they had a bunch of, you know, kind of younger elephants as well. And they, when you like hear it with like the human ear, right? You would just think they're doing the same calls, and they're saying that on some calls, like all of the elephants are responding and, you know, drawing nearer to the matriarch elephant or turning around or whatever it may be. All of the elephants are doing that. But then sometimes when the matriarch elephant would call, only a specific elephant would turn around. And they were like, like, why is that? Do the other elephants not hear? But actually using AI and using machine learning, they were able to determine that there were slight differences in these calls. And when the elephant had called, say, it had said, you know, the same elephant that individually went to it twice, they saw that those two calls were slightly different from the other calls, but those two calls were the same. So then they realized that they must be calling each other by name, or a call that identifies a single elephant out of the herd of elephants.
Wow.
To come over to the matriarch elephant. And so this is how they're communicating with one another. And this is like fantastic news, because we can see here, like, these elephants are just geniuses. You know, we often look in nature and we see so many beautiful things. Simultaneously, you know, people say, oh, there is a side of nature that is, you know, people use the word animalistic in this sense of, you know, it is kind of dumb, it is kind of raw, it is kind of, you know,
I think we're so over that idea.
Survival of the fittest, all this kind of stuff.
We are the only intelligent beings, right, in this
planet. But what we can see so clearly is that, like, elephants and, you know, dolphins and these really high-level complex animals, they're, like, on that precipice, you know, of just being so smart, having communication, you know, and functioning. Like, we see such a connection towards them in terms of how, you know, their social structures and whatnot. And it's really beautiful, and it just reminds me of the Bible, and particularly the passage in Isaiah when it's talking about heaven, and it says, it talks about the lion laying with the lamb and the wolf and the sheep being together. And it's just this clear picture of the divide in the animal kingdom that rises up because of animal aggression and a need to kill and dominate just falls away in heaven because we don't live in a world under threat anymore. And I can say, you know, I'm not looking forward to that time saying, oh yeah, like, sheep will be able to talk. Maybe they will. Maybe, like, heavenly sheep or heavenly lions, maybe they will, like, maybe they won't speak the same language as us, but maybe they'll all have these languages and be able to call each other by name. But all we know is that they'll all live in harmony together, and we get a small slither, small picture of that here on this earth with the elephant population just living in such harmony and beauty. And I just think that's so exciting.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And we are having a very special theme today across our quiz messages, yes, quiz questions, because we're celebrating, you know, our Jewish friends are celebrating Shavuot, the celebration of the Ten Commandments, when the commandments were given in 13:12. And Lawson, one of the things that they do is that they often eat dairy.
Yeah. You said that they eat lots of cheese.
Cheese and dairy products. And you know why?
Why?
Because when the commandments were given, it was a Sabbath day, and they were not supposed to kill any animals.
Mm-hmm.
So they believed that on that day, they must have eaten dairy in Mount Sinai. So they are celebrating that. This is one of the reasons. This is one of the explanations there. But this is why you eat lots of dairy. And they will light up candles and decorate the homes with flowers. So today, it's all about the Ten Commandments here on Faith FM. And what is quiz question number two, Lawson?
Number two is, according to the Ten Commandments, what day is set aside for rest and worship? 0491-064-669. According to the Ten Commandments, what day is set aside for rest and worship? 0491-064-669. That is the number to text if you know the answer. Our prizes for this week are amazing. They're epic. We want to give them to you absolutely for free. We have either a King James or a New King James Bible. Both of them beautiful compact Bibles, expensive compact Bibles, zipper protected, red leather, leather bound, and they're just amazing. Maybe you have a compact Bible. Well, hey, this will be a fantastic Bible for a friend, family, spouse, your kids, whoever it may be. Again, 0491-064-669 is the number to text. According to the Ten Commandments, what day is set aside for rest and for worship? Joseph.
So yeah, Suzanne sent a message here, Lawson. She said about you're mentioning that you're following this program called the Maker Heals.
Yeah.
And she said, the Maker Heals is a fantastic and inspiring program. I did it last year and it made me aware of the need to chew my food more.
Yep.
And the spiritual connection that goes with physical health. You're going to love the taste of food other than fruit tomorrow, Lawson. So here's an encouragement to you, Lawson. And she said also that tamarind monkeys are my favorite. Oh, they're so cute.
What is it? What are tamarind monkeys?
They're like these tiny little monkeys. They are all furry and nice.
Oh, they are cute.
Mustache, some of
them. Yeah, look at this one. Dude, it looks like an old man. That's so cute.
It's so cute. I'd love to be friends with one tamarind monkey as well. Thank you, Suzanne, for sharing. And what is your favorite animal, listener? Just let us know. 0491-064-669. And speaking of commandments and speaking of animals, some animal right activists in the UK.
I saw this.
Just did something, Lawson. They defaced the first and newly presented royal King Charles III portrait in the UK. Mm-hmm. So I do not know if you have seen, it's a stunning portrait, in my opinion. It was created by British artist Jonathan Yale, and it portrays the king holding a sword, wearing the uniform of the Welsh Guards, mm-hmm. and blending into a matching red backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
I find it to be pretty, a very beautiful piece of art.
Pretty epic.
Not everybody agrees. Some people think that, hey, they don't like the portrait at all.
Sure.
But I'm not among them. In either case, what happened is that, this is Thursday. On Tuesday, some animal rising protesters, they sticked an image of Wallace. Wallace from Wallace and Gromit. That stop motion animation on top of Charles's face.
Mm.
And a little speech bubble underneath it.
Yeah.
Okay. That was at a London gallery here. What did the speech bubble say, Lawson?
It said, "No cheese, Gromit. Look at all this cruelty in the RSPCA farms."
That's right.
That's so hectic.
The stickers were there for about 10 to 15 seconds. According to the London gallery, they did not damage the portrait at all. The portrait actually had a plastic sheet protecting the painting.
Yeah.
So they do this for precaution. I think that it is wise. And there's a lot of comments going on around. So let's unpack this a little bit.
Yeah.
What is this whole RSPCA thing that they are alluding to?
Well, Australian people would know about the RSPCA because the RSPCA functions in Australia as well, and they are seen as like an animal rights. They're probably the most respected animal rights advocacy group. They're like you got like PETA and stuff like that are like really hectic, and probably these animal rising people as well that are really intense. Whereas RSPCA, it's like they approve whether cruelty is happening on farms, whether
correct.
They have animal adoption centers and stuff like that.
So. That's right. So what happened is that Animal Rising did an investigation on 45 RSPCA assured or certified farms.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a farm has the RSPCA approval or assurance or logo, it means that, well, it should be communicating that they are treating animals fairly.
Mm-hmm.
However, this video found that in 45 of these farms, they had the sticker, they had the seal of approval, but they were not respecting animals.
Okay.
So, they made a little documentary about it. And in the footage, it shows scenes including baby chickens dying in factory farms and pigs being left dead for days in their sheds. So they wanted to raise awareness for that. And this is why they committed that act of vandalism. Well, according to the group, to Animal Rising, this is what they said on Twitter or X now.
Mm-hmm.
The light-hearted act played on the king's love of Wallace and Gromit and his status as royal patron. Mm. So last month, King Charles became a patron of RSPCA. And of course, Wallace is a cheese-loving character
in
the videos. So this is what they said here. Daniel Juniper you know, from the animal rights group, Animal Rising. He said, with King Charles being such a big fan of Wallace and Gromit, we couldn't think of a better way to draw his attention to the horrific scenes on RSPCA assured farms.
I want to ask a question. Are they saying that there's cruelty in these farms because they don't live up to the RSPCA standards?
That's right.
Or are they saying that RSPCA standards are bad?
Like, No. They're saying that the RSPCA standards are good.
Okay.
But they're not living up to them. And they're implying that is RSPCA aware, or are they making a blind eye to that? Now, RSPCA said that they were, quote, shocked by the vandalism. And they said that these concerns about farms certified by them were being taken seriously. So say we're on this, okay? Now, in the social media, there were people, you know, on both sides. You know, one person here on X said, it's both good activism and a hilarious practical joke. I love it. Well done. One person said.
I'm actually, I'll let you read more responses.
Okay. So this is one. Okay. Another person said, to the two who carried out this action, you are my heroes. And, other people said, this is not a great idea. He said, and I quote, not sure what to think of this. Is vandalizing the right way of getting your message across? You know, and I think it's a valid question. What do you think, Lawson?
So as, you know, a vegetarian and for a long time, 4 years, I was a vegan, and, you know, the only thing that has, I've revoked my veganism card because I've recently started eating eggs a couple months ago. And so, you know, I'll be honest about that. But, hey, when it comes to animal rights activism, it's something that when I bring up, like, eating a plant-based diet, I always get questions about it, you know, and so I kind of keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on in that space a little bit. And I can say most of the animal rights activists are just cringe. Like, it's just terrible. Like the vandalism that they do, you know, and like, cause it goes further than this. It's also like, and they often get lumped in with, climate rights activists as well. And yeah, a lot of it is just, it is vandalism, particularly when they go to the farms and like try to like, you know, knock the farms down and like cut the wires of farms and let all the animals out, or like lay on the ground in traffic.
Sometimes they exaggerate a little bit, right?
Or they go to art galleries and they destroy
They
like use paint or fire or whatever it may be. This is like funny. Like, this is funny, and like, not funny in the sense that it's disrespecting King Charles, but it's also like the thing that I like about this the most is that it's harmless. Look, they want to get their message. That's the big thing. It's like, you can see it as an act of disrespect towards Charles and whatnot, but I'm like, at least it was harmless. At least they could just pull the thing off. Their message got across.
Yeah.
They walked in, did it, and walked out. They didn't like make a big scene and start trying to punch people and fight people, which usually happens at these kinds of things.
Yeah.
Like, that was my opinion.
That's a good point. Look, I got a Bible verse here. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 17. It says, honor all people.
Sure.
Love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king. Is this honoring the king? So for the Christian, for a Christian, the Christian has this duty of honoring the authorities that empower, both the ones that we agree with and the ones that we don't agree with. I think that there are other better ways, because as Christians, we need to be model citizens so that we can not only not be drawing unnecessary negative attention to the gospel, because people could say, oh, all these Christians, they are all, you know, all the naysayers, all, you know, all about, you know, they're terrible citizens. But in the end of times, when the times comes for us to make a stand for God's law, we cannot have attached to us a label of, oh yeah, they already rebel against any law anyway, so why would in this case be any different?
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
This is our text line for you to message us with the right answer to the following quiz question, Lawson.
All right, here we go. Next question. In which commandment does God say he is jealous? There is a commandment in the Bible where God says he is jealous, in the Ten Commandments. Which one of them is it? Out of the 10, you know, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, which commandment is it where God says he is jealous? 0491-064-669 is the number to text if you know the answer to that one.
That's right. And it's now the interview time, and we have Rod Bailey, our correspondent for gardening and all things nature. Rod, good morning to you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning to you.
Oh, that's right. Well, I like the voice already and the enthusiasm here. You know, someone that already spent some time outdoors in the nature. Rod, we want to know about raising seedlings. It seems to be so difficult at times. What can you tell us so we can have more success at that activity?
Yeah, it's true that sometimes raising seedlings can be a challenge, particularly. You know, when we're doing it for the first time, but I thought I'd share a couple of things that have made a huge difference to us.
Okay, I'm all ears here because, hey, let me just tell you this. I have ruined so many seedlings in my life. I do not consider myself to be a successful seedling person. So I'm, you know, I have my pen on my hand. I'm taking notes. I'm all ears, Rod. Tell us.
Okay. So remember a couple of programs ago, we talked about how as gardeners, we're kind of conductors of the orchestra when it comes to plants. And so our role as gardeners and seedling growers is to arrange the environment that the seeds and then the seedlings are going to grow into their benefit. And so let's just go through the basics.
Okay.
First of all, we need some sort of a container to hold some sort of seed raising mix or soil in. All right. And that container, we're looking at something that is going to have enough volume of seed raising mix to accommodate the roots of the plant. And so if your seedling is only going to be in the container for a very short period of time, then the amount of seed raising mix can be relatively small. But if it's going to be there for a long time, like maybe your tomato or capsicum that we allow to grow larger, we need something with more soil volume, if you like.
Okay.
And you can use plastic or you can use eggshells or toilet paper hole rolls or whatever you like.
Mm-hmm.
Principle is enough seed raising mix to support the roots of the seedling through its life until it's transplanted.
Okay.
Second thing is the soil or the seed raising mix that we grow the seedlings is important. I've tried it with all sorts of things. I've used my own soil here, which is way too heavy. I've used compost and I've made my own seed raising mixes and stuff.
Yeah.
But I've ended up buying a seed raising mix. It's a commercial product. I've tried six or eight, but I find the product I use is Searles. That's the brand. Not that I'm advocating that, but that's the one that I've found that works. Okay.
Okay.
So it needs to be well draining. In other words, it'll hold a small amount of water, but not too much.
Okay.
Because if the soil is too heavy and holds too much water, then the seedlings can be very susceptible to fungal diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And what we call dampening off, which is when, you know, the seedling's growing nicely and then it just dies.
Oh.
Usually that's a fungal disease.
Interesting.
All right?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I definitely made that mistake already. And I think that my current seedlings, I'm trying to do some kale seedlings at the moment and I'm using my compost and I'm thinking that it's probably holding too much water.
Okay, it can either be too much, depending on the nature of the compost. It may be holding too much water. It may be holding not enough.
Okay.
So the challenge with a free-draining seedling mix is that it doesn't hold a lot of water there, which is what we're wanting to avoid the fungal diseases. But then at the same time, it's sometimes if the sun's shining on that seed-raising mix and the water is evaporating out of it, it's quick to dry out, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And little seeds, as they sprout, as they germinate and grow, they're very susceptible to dying because the soil. Sorry, I've got a backhoe driving past me. The boys are
look,
are loading some compost. Sorry,
that's
about
farm life. All good. It's part of the deal.
That's right. Okay, so with the free-draining seed-raising mix, there's a danger that it's going to dry out too much when the sun shines on it, and the tiny little seedling that's trying to germinate and grow is going to die because it gets dry.
Okay.
So The answer to that is a natural product called vermiculite.
Okay.
Vermiculite.
Okay.
And you can buy it's a natural product that's full of holes. All right.
Okay.
Tiny little air holes.
Okay. Yep.
All right, so it's very light, not as light as a feather, but very light. And you can buy that from nursery supplies or your local nursery or even from some of the big hardware stores like Bunnings has that.
Okay.
All right, and so, okay, let's go back a step. We have our container that we're going to put our seed raising mix in.
And does it matter? So you said it doesn't really matter if it's plastic, silicone, or as long as it does the job, right?
Yep. You know, a lot of people just use recycled containers or yogurt containers or whatever else.
Okay,
so you've put the seed raising mix in your container and then you've put the seeds on top of your seed raising mix, whether it's kale seeds or lettuce seeds or anything like that. Just put it on top. If it's a big seed like a pumpkin or a watermelon, you might want to just press it down into the seed raising mix a little bit. And then you take your vermiculite and you sprinkle it over the top of your seedling punnet or your tray or your container or whatever to a depth of 5 to 8 millimeters. All right. It's not, it doesn't have to be exactly 5 millimeters because the seedlings will just push up through this really light material.
Okay.
All right. But the purpose of that vermiculite is to insulate the seed raising mix against drying out and thus the little seed from drying out. All right. And so what happens is when you water that vermiculite, you know, with a gentle spray of water, it absorbs a lot of moisture into those air holes.
Yes.
All right. And it provides an insulative layer to stop that seed raising mix from drying out. And to us, this has been a key to success. So our seed success rates were, you know, 60, 70%, but now they're 99%. It's made a huge difference to us.
So let me ask you a little bit more about this, a little bit deeper. So you mentioned that you have this success, you know, 99%, which is quite incredible. So so when you're planting the smaller seeds, how many should do you recommend? For example, I was planting the kale seeds. They are extremely tiny.
Yes.
You know, so I just dropped a whole bunch of them there. But is that like a magic number, like 3 or 5 or something like that? Depends. What would you recommend?
Depends what size container. You know, we grow in seedling trays, and so there's just enough soil in one little space in the seedling tray for one plant. So we put one seed in each little cell, if you like, in the seedling tray.
Even for a small seed, like a kale?
Yeah, that's right. Because then we have a plant with its roots all together that we can pull out of the seedling tray and plant into the soil.
Interesting.
All right, but you're familiar, I'm sure, with the seedling punnets. You know, they're about 4 to 5 inches long and 2 inches wide sort of thing. Sorry, I'm still speaking imperial. All right. But in one of those, and that's usually the size of container that we buy them in at the nursery.
Okay.
All right. So in that, I would put either 6 or 8 kale seeds in if I was going to put it plant into one of those containers. So what we're looking to be, your plants are looking to be 25 or 30 millimeters apart, if you like. All right. And so then if you grow multiple plants in one punnet, then you're going to have to kind of break the seed raising mix and roots apart to plant each little plant.
Yes.
All right. And so, you know, then you end up with a 25 millimeter by 25 millimeter block sort of thing that has the roots of that plant in it.
Okay.
Okay, so not too. So maybe you can take that as a rule of thumb: 25 to 30 millimeters apart gives each little seedling space to spread its roots and ready for planting out.
Okay, so if you're planting on a tray like that, then you have to be careful and gentle. I'm assuming with your hand, because if you're talking about planting on single cells, it's easier because by the time that the plant is ready to be transplanted, it kind of exits the container with a little cubical format, doesn't it?
Correct, yeah. But when you plant more than one seed in each cell, then you've got to just break those roots apart gently as you pull them out. And that's not ideal, but if you transplant it on a suitable day, the seedlings will survive just fine.
Okay. And do you use the same mix, same seedling raising mix for everything, or different crops require perhaps different nutrients or something different?
No, same for everything. Same seed raising mix, because the seed raising mix does provide some nutrients, but not a lot. There's definitely not enough nutrients in there to see the seedling all the way through to being ready to transplant. And so we, in our nursery, Wendy uses a sea salt product.
Okay.
You know, it's a liquid fertilizer, and she just mixes it up in a watering can and then waters that liquid fertilizer over there. Just to give the seedling just gentle nutrition as it's growing.
Okay.
But you definitely can't rely on the nutrition in the seed raising mix.
Oh, that's a very, very important tip. Now, we have a question here from, a listener, Suzanne. She said this: I've always put two seeds in a pot and prick out the weaker one before transplanting. Should I just put one seed in them instead?
Okay, you can definitely do that if you're confident about the quality of the seeds that you're planting. Like, the seeds that we plant, we're very confident that we're going to get, like, 99% germination out of them.
Okay.
But many of the seeds we buy from, you know, in a packet from a nursery or from Bunnings, etc., or a hardware store, you know, you might be only getting 60 or 70% germination. So her practice of planting a couple of seeds is not a bad idea.
Okay, yes. Particularly if you don't know, you know, how well these seeds are going to be germinating.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
And are there things that it's better off for us just to sow directly in our garden beds or in the soil? For example, I'm thinking here about radishes. Is it even worth it to make seedlings out of them or to just direct sow? What are your opinion about that?
I direct sow anything that has a root. So whether it's radishes or turnips or carrots, the only root crop that we grow as seedlings is beetroot.
Okay.
And they do okay being transplanted. I think they do better direct seeded. But we plant a lot of them. And so we grow seedlings to enable us to control the weeds in our garden better. You know, we're planting beetroot whose plants are 100 millimeters tall instead of a tiny seed. So the other crops that we direct sow are corn and peas and beans.
Okay.
So that's kind of a rule of thumb. But hey, I just want to come back to another one of the keys of success of seedling growing.
Yes, and Rod, we have one minute left. So, yes, just so you can be aware.
One key is to feed them, you know, with some liquid fertilizer. You know, we do it once a week, but regularly to keep the growth going. But the second thing is just to maintain, even though we're using that vermiculite, we still need to make sure that we maintain the moisture levels. Otherwise, they can still dry out, but the vermiculite really helps with that.
Okay, so you recommend watering the seedlings, you know, once a day?
Well, at least checking it once a day. Obviously, if it's raining on the seedlings, you don't need to water, but it's important to check them once a day. In summer, we have to water our seedlings twice a day, even with the vermiculite. So they take care like the babies that they are.
So you leave them out in the open. You don't shelter them in some kind of canopy or greenhouse.
We have them in a plastic seedling house when they're very small, just to provide that cared for environment. But then it's important to bring them out into the outside environment in the sun for a couple of weeks before you're ready to plant them into the garden. Otherwise, you take them out of a very sheltered environment and put them out in the garden, they're going to really struggle and often die.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Well, some incredible expert tips here with Rod Bailey about how to raise seedlings. Thank you very much, Rod. We're looking forward to have you again with us on the show next time.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.